1 Corinthians, Paul says, "For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field. You are God's building. According to the grace of God which was given to me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds upon it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." In this podcast, we explore those who went the wrong way. We examine how it happened, why it happened, and who it happened to. But most importantly, we always ask the question, could it happen to us? Thanks for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Before we begin, we want to be clear, the opinions that we present are ours alone and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of our respective churches or employers. Now, let's begin. Okay, Matt, so we're back once again for our fourth session of this episode of this cult, right? This is our new response segment.
Yes.
Segment. That's a better term.
Segment. That's what we're looking for.
That's the right word.
Yes.
Yep. So we're here to talk about how Christians, how non-Christians, how society, right, should respond to a group like this, right? Or in this case, should have responded to a group like this, right? Because they're obviously no longer active and functioning, which does make it a little bit more difficult. But
well, let's add a little bit to that. That a couple things. One, in the beginning of this episode, yeah, Y'all heard our disclaimer. So let me just refer back to our disclaimer. Y'all listen to that. This stuff doesn't refer to any of our employers or churches or groups that we're a part of.
Right.
This isn't their opinions or beliefs. These are ours. But I do want to say that we are both Christians, practicing Christians, followers and believers in Jesus Christ, and that our response is going to be tinted by that.
Yes.
One of the things we think makes 100%. Our cult podcast different than some others, not all others, but some others, is that we try to have a Christian response to this. We can't say we profess to speak for all Christians. Let me tell you who we speak for, Matt and Brian. That's the best we can tell you. However, we can use our experiences and our best understanding from our religious practicing and study that to apply that to a response to this.
Yep.
Right? Yep. You were fixing to mention, you know, your particular background in responding to such a thing, right?
I mean, I did when we tried recording this before, and it
I was
failed,
trying to reference the before recording, but yes, the recording failed, so we had to restart.
People need to know that even two senior IT guys have problems from time to time.
I mean, I'm a Mac user.
Well, that's your problem.
I if it doesn't just work, why do it?
Right? Oh, dear. But no, so response, right, especially coming from when we talk about the theology of these groups, right, I'm coming from my apologetics background, right? I have a degree in apologetics, right? I haven't just read a few books. I've gone and actually gotten the degree. And as much as I like my degree, right, the school that I got it from takes apologetics more as how do we argue in such a way to make someone believe what we believe, right? And that's not what apologetics was for the first century for Justin Martyr, right? It's not what apologetics was in the fourth century for St. John Chrysostom, the seventh century for St. John the Theologian. Is it John the Theologian that wrote? Anyway, it's not what it was, right? It was a defense, but it was from love, right? It was responding to criticisms, to questions, right? I mean, St. Justin Martyr wrote against people who were saying Christians were cannibals, right? He was simply correcting the wrong, right? He wasn't trying to argue. He wasn't trying to convince them to become Christians. He was simply saying, no, we're not cannibals. while, yes, I use the word apologetics, that's the term apologetics to me, right? That response. And that's what this episode segment really should be, is how do we respond from love and correct the record, right? How do we help people today to see the red flags that was Manson?
See, I think I would take that a step further. Yep. Probably what more modern apologetics, or what the university you're referencing without referencing would say with apologetics, and that it's not just about saying, oh, no, we're not cannibals. But hey, yo, what Jesus really taught was, and I think that's part of our response, is not just saying, yes, oh, Manson didn't teach right. That's not accurate, y'all. It's that, well, here's what is accurate, and right, here's
it's
why.
It's that correcting
type thing.
It's that correcting of the wrong, right? Absolutely. And so my hope is that this segment gives you, the listener, right, and even me and you, Matt, the ability to recognize fault, right? Even if we take just a single segment from every cult that we talk about, over time, I'm hoping that will help us to see, okay, wait, here are red flags, here's problems. Where do we need to correct?
Well, and this is very important that we recognize, you said fault, but I would characterize it as false. And it's important we recognize that, you know, the Apostle Paul talked about false teachers. Mm-hmm. And as he was writing letters, he's like, you know, y'all let these false teachers in, because these people were eager to learn. They just found out about Jesus Christ, just started following him, formed this church, and these other wolves came in and said, oh, let me tell y'all the truth. And these people just learned the truth, so they thought, well, there's more truth to learn. And so they were kind of susceptible to this.
Yep.
And I will say I've been the same way in my spiritual journey at times, where I've kind of been susceptible to things, and until I learned a little more and could discern more,
right?
You know, as what we talk about, you know, milk and meat, right? In the beginning, it's milk,
right?
The baby doesn't know if they got bad milk, right?
Exactly.
But by the time you're an adult and you're eating meat, you sure enough know when it's a bad piece of meat,
right?
My wife and I were just talking the other day. We have a bad habit. I'm sure you don't have this habit. Actually, I know you well enough to know you don't have this habit. But other people our age do, in that y'all go out and buy groceries. What we do, we go out and buy groceries, and we say, we're going to cook every meal this week. We got 7 meals for supper here. And then 3 of those days, we go out to eat. Or we order in or whatever. And then we've got this meat sitting there that's going to go bad if we don't cook it. So we end up sticking it in the freezer. Well, that's fine if you stick it in the freezer plenty of time. But if it goes bad on the 30th of January and you don't stick it in the freezer till the 30th of January,
right?
Then April 15th, you go to pull it out, you just froze bad meat. So sometimes I don't get stuff in the freezer like I should. So then when we pull it out to eat it, we have to say, okay, is this good? Is this not good?
Yeah.
So a couple of I could do a whole sermon on bad meat. I'm not going to go on to a whole sermon here, but a couple of things we do, and this is important with our response here, right? As we've talked before, you and I have a little bit of variance in our beliefs, but we have a lot of things we agree on too. And even if we agreed on 100%, which would never be 100%, but even if we were both the same denomination or something, right? We would still not always be in the same place, even if we both think we're mature Christians.
Absolutely.
We're not always in the same place. So my wife will call me in the kitchen. She'll say, I think this meat might be bad. Now, she knows we ain't rich and we can't afford to throw out $500 worth of hamburger meat or whatever it is.
You got $500 worth of hamburger meat for?
Hamburger meat's expensive, whatever it costs.
Right.
You know, $49.95 or whatever. It's expensive hamburger meat. She knows we can't be throwing out this hamburger meat, but she also don't want to serve us bad meat. And so she sniffs it and thinks, this is probably bad, but let me check with Matt and see if he thinks it's bad. And when we both agree it's bad, it goes in the trash. And then I make some comment about how all of our money ends up in the trash. We should just put money directly into the trash. Not a pleasant experience for anybody. But the same thing with this. I think it's important that we weigh this. And I think it's important that as we look at these groups, we weigh where they went wrong.
Yeah.
So I think we've kind of set what we're going to talk about here. So to Absolutely. Keep in our time so. Frame, let's start off with Manson. Where do we?
Okay.
Where did he go wrong? Let's start.
Well, so I don't know if you have the OneNote open, but I do have notes.
I don't have it open
because
so.
I'm a nerd. I'm a nerd like I that. I should have. I write things down. So I struggled with coming up exactly what to respond to, right? Because there are so many pieces, right? I mean, I could probably sit for an hour and talk about how, you know, Manson calling himself the angel of the abyss is a bad thing, not a good thing. But really, the issue at play that I have, right, that I think we need to spend the most amount of time on is his messianic claims.
Okay.
Right.
Because this should have been a red flag for people.
It should have been a red flag for anyone and everyone day one. Right. But, you know, we just finished talking in the last episode about how he manipulated people. Right. Because Manson didn't start out wandering the desert claiming to be Christ.
Right.
You know, he started out teaching little pieces and little snippets here and there and building upon them, right? He would say things like, you know, I've died before, you know, or, you know, anything, right? He would come up with all of these different things to imply that he was the Christ without coming out and explicitly claiming that title.
Well, and let's talk about that for a moment. Because he very intentionally targeted followers who had problems with their parents, mm-hmm. who wanted to reject the world their parents lived in.
Yes.
It is unlikely that he had many followers who grew up going to Sunday school every week and learning about things.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't mean they were completely ignorant of Christianity, though, because even now we still have this, but then it was even more prevalent in the 60s and 70s. Yes, we had cultural Christianity. So even if you didn't grow up and go to church every Sunday, if people asked you, are you a Christian, most people in America said yes.
Said yes, yep.
Whether they would understood that or not. And they were certain societal norms.
Right.
And so knowledge of Jesus, you know, rising from the dead and things like that was a common knowledge in American society.
Right.
So, yes, he was very much knew what he was doing. Also, let's remember that he had a background in was it the Nazarene Church?
Yes.
He had a background in the Nazarene Church, which, you know, his grandmother was real big into that, and mm-hmm. he went with her, and he participated in the Nazarene Church. He knew about extreme devotion and knew mm-hmm. about these things. He was not ignorant of these things either.
Right.
So he knew the keywords. And so if anybody is to come to you and try to claim messianic things like that, well, that's something you should be worried about.
Yeah. You know, I wrote a note. Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's not another Jesus coming, y'all. We don't need another Jesus.
No, absolutely. I wrote a note here that I think, you know, I don't know if you've looked at the notes yet, but it's probably going to catch you by surprise, right? That anyone, including Jesus, right, who claims this title of Messiah, should be looked at with skepticism.
I think Jesus encouraged people to look at him. That was part of it.
With skepticism. Yep.
Yeah. Y'all.
Yep. Yeah. He wanted people to know and understand the truth. Right? Blind devotion is easily swayed.
That's true.
You know, if you simply say, yes, this person claimed to be Jesus, and so therefore they are Jesus, the next person who claims to be Jesus, you're going to say, oh, well, maybe they're Jesus.
And Jesus wanted people to figure that out. He did not, mm-hmm. when people would ask him, are you Christ? He would say, well, who do you say I am?
Right.
You know, he intentionally exhibited the signs and things. Yep. There are times when he said, hey, follow me. But he always backed that up.
Right. Absolutely.
Now, Charlie backed that up with some things. He did some things that made the people want to follow him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they had known the scriptures, they would have known better. So that brings me to another point that I hope isn't running on one of your points, is that it is important that we know scriptures ourselves in order to defend against false teachers. So Paul made this point that he had taught people things.
Mm-hmm.
And that they didn't have to go out to all these other teachers. There was nothing new.
So we live in a time, and I know you and I kind of don't see eye to eye on the scriptures, right?
You think we live in the third century.
You know, but
I mean that in jest.
We live in a time where the scriptures are not authoritative for people, right? And so telling people, hey, you need to know the scriptures to know the answers to this, doesn't really get them what they need, right? Because so many people, including people who claim to be Christians, right, don't view the scriptures as the authority, as authoritative at any level, right? They don't look at them as being true. They look at them as fables or fairy tales. And so I would venture to say, if someone claims messianic title of any sort, right, whether it's Jesus, the Christ, Messiah, the Buddha, any sort of messianic type of title, right, the first thing that you should view is the fruit, right? What is coming from them that proves who they are? While, yes, Charlie Manson did do some things that some people might consider messianic adjacent, right? He was manipulative. He led people eventually to murdering people. Right?
But how would you know that isn't the fruit of a Messiah?
Okay, so you're right. You know, we're in that weird space of how do you know, right? So if someone does claim to be the Christ, right, we should at least be looking at the history of what's the Christ supposed to do, right? And we see that in all the Jewish writings of the Old Testament and into the Second Temple Judaism period. You know, if someone claims to be the Buddha, right, you should be going and looking at what is the Buddha supposed to do, right? Is the Buddha supposed to murder people? They're probably not the Buddha.
Well, again, this is where we would disagree, because I wouldn't look into the history of anything. I would pull the history from Scripture only. And I think it's important that we have to know the Scripture in order to know what that is. And that's why I keep saying you need to know that stuff. I'm not saying you got to be an expert in the Bible, but it is important that if you're a practicing Christian, you should be studying your Scripture.
Well, now there's a distinct importance there, right? That you said, if you're a practicing Christian,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm looking at it from, if you're any Joe Blow off the street.
Well, and I was getting to that,
right?
Because I noticed you included Buddha and such. And honestly, right. I can't offer a defense of someone who claims they're Buddha and then something's changed.
No.
And I will tell you that whether it's Buddha or Christ that they're claiming, the way a lot of these cult leaders portray this is they manipulate mm-hmm. those scriptures that I keep referring to.
Right.
So let's talk about Manson and his manipulation of scriptures. So okay. Manson specifically would quote things out of Revelation and then say they applied to him. Things mm-hmm. that are imagery. I forget the word. But Revelation is not written completely literally.
Right. Yeah. It's a lot of symbolism.
Symbolism and stuff. And he would quote them in pieces to justify that. So he by himself would do that. So this is where I would agree with you some that this is why it's important that you have a basis. If you, again, I'm looking from the side of a Christian, that you have a church to go back to and you have spiritual leaders of your own.
Right.
Is very important, though, in Christianity. There is no one spiritual leader that is all supreme powerful except for Jesus Christ.
Right.
There's no replacement for that. So, yeah, if you're a follower of Buddha and someone else is claiming they're the Buddha, I don't know enough about Buddhism, although I do know a little bit about Buddhism. Yeah, I know I'm saying it funny, but Buddhism. I do know enough about it to know the basic tenets and such. And I do know enough to know that people can claim they're Buddha. Mm-hmm. Buddha was a person, but Buddha is also a state. Right. And so there's that. And so, and especially in the different sects of it. However, in Christianity, there was only one Jesus Christ. There are people who have claimed that, but there's only one Jesus Christ. So I think, the manipulation of the scripture, I think anytime somebody says, I have a translation that's different than everybody else, it's important that we look back and we see what else has happened. Now, I'm not saying everybody else is right, but I think it is important that we look back and look at other things too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's where we would agree.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm all about going back and looking at what somebody in the third century said. So, okay. Carrying on this same vein, right? Looking at it from a Christian standpoint, right? Because, you know, like you said, we're both Christians. It's hard to respond when you're trying to be all encompassing. But if you're a Christian, right, and you're listening to someone that's teaching you these things that implies or even outright says that they are the Messiah, right? Jesus gave very explicit warnings to his disciples, who then told their disciples, right, watch out for this. You know, in Matthew chapter 24, you know, the end times chapter of Matthew that so many people jump to, Jesus talked about many people will come and they will claim to be the Messiah. They'll be out in the desert. Don't go. Run the other way. They're lying to you, right? He didn't mince words in that moment, right? His words, for false anointed ones and false prophets will be raised up, and they will produce great signs and prodigies so as to lead people astray, even the chosen. See, I've told you in advance. Therefore, if they say he is in the desert, don't go out. Look, he's in the inner rooms. Don't believe. Right? For as the lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so shall the arrival of the Son of Man be.
And I think it's important that listening to a teacher is not the same as somebody who's claiming to be Christ. Even right. Jesus had disciples who had followed other teachers,
mm-hmm.
Who had made the way for Jesus. I dropped my thing in my hand here.
Mm-hmm.
So listening to a teacher or a preacher is not necessarily a bad thing, but there is definitely a line, and we should always be aware of that line. And as you mentioned with Manson, it can change over time. I think there are some legit teachers who were legit preachers and then changed. I think the CSA we talked about previously was a good example of that. I think they legit were trying to follow Jesus for a while there, and then they got off and corrupted, including their pastor. Now, Charles Manson, I don't think that was the case. I think he planned this the whole time. I don't think he was trying to do anything positive but serve himself. He was an abused little boy. He became an abused young man who became an abused adult who abused others. Hurt people.
Yep.
And that's what he did. He hurt other people.
Yep. Yep.
That's the other thing. Jesus don't hurt you.
Nope.
Jesus is not out to hurt you. He's not out to cause you trouble and pain and strife. A lot of these cult leaders follow this extreme love with extreme violence.
Right.
And they always give to their own self-carnal desires every time it comes back to sex. Over and over again.
Every time.
It's taking advantage of some little girls over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Manson was no different.
Right.
And that just ain't who Jesus was.
Nope. Nope. Comes back to looking at the fruit. You know, what they're actually doing is far more important than what they say.
Okay. Do you have anything else in your list of notes you want to cover on this?
Well, the last piece that I wanted to cover kind of ties in with what you were just saying, only because you said in the history episode, the very first one of Manson, that we would talk about this. but Manson and many other cult leaders who took on a messianic role made everything about themselves.
True.
Right. They were the center of life for those people. And I can tell you, if you are working with any group, any people, any person, and they are taking the worship away from Christ and placing it on anything else, they're wrong.
Even before Christ was introduced in the Bible, in the time of Moses, every time the people would deviate away from God, they would go to something else, and that would be an idol, and that'd be a false idol.
Right. Well, and you know, what's really crazy, right? We read Hebrews, right? And now you got me thinking here, right? You read Hebrews, right? And what we see in Hebrews is everything from the Old Testament was still centered on Christ.
Yeah.
Christ was still the center of worship, even before his incarnation in the first century. Right? If the devotion, if the worship, if anything is not about Christ, it's wrong.
I agree.
And I can tell you some of the groups we're going to talk about in the future. Right? We can start talking about future things now.
Future things.
Some of the groups that we talk about, right, look Christian, sound Christian. Certain people in mine and Matt's families love these people.
Uh-oh.
And they have made things not about Christ.
It's a distraction.
And the moment you do that, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And so be very, very wary of anyone that's claiming to be Christian at any level that's not making it about Christ.
So that's the serious part. Let's get to the fun part.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fun part.
So okay. At the end of every one of our
we got to figure out how we're going to do this in the video.
Yes. How many cups of Kool-Aid are we going to rate Charles Manson?
Oh, man. So, looking at our
metrics,
if I can find them.
So let me add here that Ryan's using the metrics and Matt's making it up. But we come to a pretty pretty decent number here, because I know y'all want to know how many cups of Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I don't know.
And while Brian's looking that up, I will mention the Kool-Aid Corporation would like me to mention that it was Flavor-Aid that Jim Jones used.
Yes.
Great Flavor-Aid, not Kool-Aid. Oh, right. Yeah.
So I think on the theology side, right, the little bit of theology that we have on Manson, he clearly hits all five of our criteria.
For sure. Right?
Social?
I think in the beginning, social side would have been like one, maybe two. But by the end, right, when he wouldn't let people leave, five.
Yeah, I think I think they were right up there. Yep.
I remember his first thing when you became a follower is to leave your father and mother.
Right.
He wanted you to isolate as quickly as possible. The only option to not isolate is if he was getting money out of you.
Yep.
So there's that social isolation we talk about.
I would give them an easy 4 Flavor-Aid cups.
Oh, it's Kool-Aid because it sounds fun.
Kool-Aid.
Okay. Red Kool-Aid too, because I mean, if you're going to have Kool-Aid, have red.
Yep, it's got to be the red.
I would say 5. I think this is a textbook definition of a cult right here. This is not they're just a little extreme. Oh, they morphed to becoming a cult. I think he started out to become a guru and start a cult. Mm-hmm. And he was super successful at it. I think if he had not gotten selfish and started murdering people, he'd be a cult leader today.
Maybe. I don't know. He died in, 2014? So he might still be alive.
He was in prison.
Went up in prison.
They don't have good medical care. Of course, he didn't have good medical care in life either. So,
Right, yeah. Tripping on LSD all the time. It's not very good medical care.
So,
okay.
There's our conclusion.
Sticks them at a 4.5.
Bad medical care, 4.5 cups of Kool-Aid.
4.5 cups of Kool-Aid. Cool. Well, Manson was a lot more fun than I expected him to be.
Yes, you weren't really wanting to do Manson. We discussed him a few different times, and you kind of put him off.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your hesitation?
I think most of my issue was how frequently that I had heard about how the murders, right? And he was just a serial killer, right? Very infrequent do you hear about he taught that he was the Christ.
Yeah.
Right? That's not really something that you hear about very frequently unless you're listening to these other podcasts and hearing about things, which I don't know about you, but this is the only podcast that I know of that I listen to that has anything
to
do with
Thank you for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods.
Oh, no, I listen to a bunch.
I need happy things every
now and then. We have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com.
Cults are fun.
Where we post a more detailed blog.
I didn't say they weren't fun. I said they weren't happy.
So that you can go into
I listen to several podcasts about cults, and I've heard Manson covered on all of them because he's a classic.
Remember to share this with a friend.
But I get what you're saying. The news, the time covered him in much of a more serial killer way. This isn't a serial killer podcast. Totally get that. Yep. I'm not even sure he was necessarily a serial killer per se. It depends on your definition of that. So. Not to mention, he didn't really do a whole lot of killing on his own. He might have killed one person. Nope. He ordered killings.
Yeah, he was the conspirator.
So yeah, I get that. So where are we going next?
Where are we going next? So
we're going to keep doing YouTube videos.
Yeah, I like this. This has been a great deal of fun. Familyradio.com.
Familyradio.com. Is that website still around?
It was the last time that I looked. But that is Harold Camping's group.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
If I remember right, he predicted the end of the world in 2014. That Christ was going to come back and the rapture was going to happen and Christians were all going to be taken away. The Antichrist was going to come, end of the world, right? That was his thing. He predicted that several times in his life.
Well, we're still here.
And we're all still here. So, and I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure that we're both Christians and we're still here. So
unique thing about him is he had a huge media campaign to go with it.
Yes.
So we're going to cover that. We're going to cover the aftermath of that. We're going to cover what happens when you predict the end of the world and all your followers discover you're wrong.
Right.
Okay.
Bum, bum, bum.
On the next episode, we'll see you then, my friends.